Hello, hello. Welcome everybody to a special episode. This is actually not going to be catered to financially savvy in 20 minutes, meaning anything about finances. We might touch a little base on it because I think that always has a play on everything that we do. But with everything that's been going on with the pandemic, and more importantly, the last few weeks with the protests, with the uprising that we're seeing throughout the country, on regards to obviously the murder of George Floyd and many others, the other names that we need to obviously recognize as well. I wanted to able to set up a special episode, and I have Carmen with me. So I'm more excited that we should have this conversation because I feel this is the time where we're supposed to use our voices and speak up for the injustices, and more importantly, be in solidarity with, especially with the Black Lives Matter movement, which is something that is very much important to both of us. So hi, Carmen. It's so good to hear your voice.
Hi. How long has it been? How are you doing? It's such a crazy time, like you said, but definitely feel like a call that we needed to talk about this. It's something that we can't just, you know, ignore and put to the side or not have a conversation. But overall, you know, I'm okay. We're at the tail end of this pandemic. The tension feels like it has kind of subsided.
Yes,
this
I'm
week.
Hoping.
So I feel like we're, you know, just kind of a little taking a breather right now with everything that's going on. But you know, how are you? How have you been handling this pandemic? I know the pandemic started and it was your busiest time in April when it's Financial Literacy Month. I know it's always like a time for you that you're traveling and. That was not
yeah,
what
it was really
this year
weird because I think the last time I saw you two was in March, and this was before the pandemic broke out. And so, obviously, we had been social distancing, and pretty much every speaking engagement I had throughout the countries, but I had more in the East Coast, had been postponed or canceled or turned into a virtual conference. Some of them still have not figured out what they're going to do yet, but it definitely was somewhat of a halt, and it was. I kind of felt like it was like a sad process too, because you're, you know, especially it takes years to get to a point in my career that I'm like, oh, I was looking forward to being these speakers at some wonderful conferences and you know, being able to see people. But it put a lot of things in perspective, being at home, but making sure everybody's healthy. I'm coping. I'm trying not to pretend that it's not affecting me or that it's easy because, and you and I have talked about this before, it's been bringing up a lot of issues too with everything that I've been seeing on TV, because I always am a product of it, but I was raised in Inglewood, and during the 92 uprisings, a lot of people call it the LA riots, but it triggered a lot of emotions and frustrations that I had as a child that I never knew would ever, you know, surface the way they have. Because when you grow up in some of the cities where you constantly see police brutality, I saw that at a very early age. I saw how our Black and Brown communities were not only targeted, but the injustices, and, you know, this is nothing new to me, unfortunately. And so the fact that it's being captured online, basically, now people have no reason to pretend it doesn't exist. And I think that's what's really hard with these images, is that, you know, you have proof, you have great footage. And Ava DuVry has just talked about this. She's saying it wasn't like a shoddy video or it was across the street. It was, you can see plain faces as clear as day. It's been a lot to take. And I'm not going to say it's an emotional roller coaster for so many of us. And I think this is why I thought you and I, these last few days, I was kind of thinking, I don't want to do it. I wanted to take a break during the summer for personal reasons and health issues and everything. And I wanted to make sure I practice what I preach about self-care and mental health. But I also felt the urge, especially the last couple of days, that it's important to use our platform. And I was afraid to do that because I thought, you know, if I use my platform other than what it's for, will I lose people, right? Or will you, you know, the audience? And at the same time, I'm like, no, this is an important matter. And if I have this particular platform, then I should be talking about the injustices that affect all of us, not just Black people. And that's what the Black Lives Matter movement is. And I think people forget that. And I'm sure that you've probably seen this on social media. It's hard not to engage with your family members or friends that don't understand or are completely on a different side of things. I had a couple conversations where it was through social media, and I was like, when I was appalled that I'm like, really, this is what you're thinking? And if someone had just posted something like, all lives matter. And I go, first of all, you're missing the point. Black Lives Matter does not mean no other lives matter. It means that their lives matter too. And it's, and it's not a call out to say that no one else matters. It's that Black men particularly are in danger, have been in danger for decades. And sent, I mean, if you look back, it's really 400 years of oppression. And so I think at being Latina, you and I being, you know, women of color, I think this is a moment to step up with solidarity. And it's been, it's, you know, I'll tell you this, it's also been beautiful. I've seen so many people of all different cultures. And especially even my white girlfriends, my colleagues, it's just been awesome to see how much they're stepping up and seeing protesting of all colors, you know, doing this together, as opposed to it just being a particular class or particular culture doing this. And I think that's the big difference that I've seen from 92 to now, where back then it was really just us Black and brown people, you know, protesting, talking about the injustices. And now you see everyone understanding that it's a whole issue around the world, not just within our country.
There's so much irony in between the 92 riots and what's going on right now, because both were filmed clear as day. We saw the injustice that was happening in front of our eyes. But you're right. Back in 92 here in LA, it was Black and brown people for themselves. But as you see now in LA, I have never seen the streets flooded in downtown LA, in East Hollywood, with so many people coming together, such diversity. I went to a few protests this weekend, and the crowd was mostly white, or, you know, white passing Hispanic. And it was such a beautiful thing to be in unification with the movement, with our Black brothers and sisters, with our Afro-Latinas brothers and sisters. So you're right. It is a beautiful movement. And I almost feel like, you know, when COVID started, this is my introspection here. When COVID started, I felt a shift, you know, like everybody was talking about there's a shift going on and we need to go through this in order to come out of the other end. So in some way, a little refreshed, a little cleansed. And when this Black Lives Matter movement happened, everybody came out to support. And I almost feel that, okay, well, as bad as COVID is, you know, of course, people were staying home and they had no other option but to pay attention to what was going on. We're almost forced to, you know, pay attention and to be part of this movement, which, you know, gave it so much of an impact. I mean, it went globally. It was just,
it's beautiful.
I was just amazed about
it. You're right on. I mean, the fact that, I mean, just the other day I heard an interview, one of the famous retired NFL players, you know, commenting on the NFL commissioner, apologizing for Colin Kaepernick. Kaepernick was the first one to have his knee down, and his career was forever changed because he decided to stand up for the injustices that he had seen so often. And so now obviously people are kneeling in that in respect to not just because of how George Floyd was killed, but how it's a movement. If you want us to be peaceful, and that doesn't help, then what's the next step, right? Using our voice, using our right to be in public spaces and the freedom of speech. And I think I love that you said that. I haven't been able to be out in protests because of my own personal issues about my husband too, dealing with his own illnesses. Our immune systems are just not available for that. But there's other ways that people can get involved, and donations and spreading the word and being able to really make an impact. And I think you and I have a few resources that I wanted to make sure that we touch base on, because sometimes I think that's the hard part. I'm seeing people not knowing what to do next. And I love that people are reaching out to me too and saying, hey, you know, where should I donate? What can I do? And I refer them to the blacklivesmatter.com, of course. I also refer them to the Bail Project, which is a nonprofit that helps people that are protesting and are obviously wrongfully being arrested. And change.org is one that people are not only helping funding the causes that are happening, but for like Breonna Taylor, for many other Black women and men that have been killed through police brutality. So I think There's definitely some resources out there. And you went to the Latinx community. You know, what did you, I know you had mentioned a few as well.
There's this book, it's called this book is anti-racist. That's a title by Tiffany Jewell, who is an anti-racist educator and activist. And this book is geared towards young adults, and families can use it to begin that conversation with mm-hmm. their children if they haven't already. And I know that is something that came to fruition for me, that I had to have a conversation with my 11-year-old nephew, which was really, really awkward. I mean, I don't know if I was doing it right, if I used the right, like, did he understand? Does he know what it's going? It was just so, there were so many feelings that came. I was almost wanting to cry because he's biracial, and he has two older brothers. His dad is Black. His grandparents are Black. And I just think, like, first, what if he's put in a situation with when he's around them and he doesn't know how to
right.
react, how to act, what's going on? So I wish I had read this book before, because I think it would have given me the verbiage and a little more confidence. So that's definitely one. There's an IG account called Con Mi Gente. It gives bilingual content. It is amazing. It has a link that directs you to a Google Doc. It's called 26 Ways to Continue the Activism, because of course, when all this energy dies down, we want to continue the momentum of fighting against the police brutality and changing laws. So it has 26 ways to continue the activism. Therapy for Latinx.com. I love that they have postings that give you the verbiage in Spanish and the terms in Spanish that you can have a conversation with your parents, with your elders in Spanish, because, you know, us millennials, we are very active and we're bilingual, but some of the terms in Spanish don't come to us. So we end up speaking Spanglish, so it gets lost in translation. So I love that. And that's really helpful tool.
Because it brings up those other issues about having Afro-Latino be part of that solution, right? I mean, my two youngest nephews are Afro-Latinos as well. And it's that having that conversation. And you know, it's crazy because my younger brother is 5 years younger than me. And I remember when I first got my license, my dad sat me down and was telling me, like, obviously the responsibilities, but he also was saying things that, one, I can really understand because I'm a woman. It's a little different. It's very different as opposed to our Black and brown men. But he started going into detail with my brother, who didn't even have his license yet, about things he needs to do whenever he is going to be driving on his own and is ever stopped by police. And it's a reality. And I was looking at my dad like, why is that important? Or, you know, and it makes sense to me as growing up and as I saw it myself, you know, the injustices we have as brown people too, we see it, we're surrounded by it. And so having those conversations, finding out how we can obviously just understand each other, how we can, I always refer to this video that just came out by Lauren Whitney. And it was a 2-minute video on Instagram that it was called, When did my Black baby become a threat to you? And it's such a powerful 2-minute video. And it's just showing how the microaggressions that turn into aggressions that can ultimately turn into obviously a killing. And it's just, those are the things that we need to watch out for, what we say, words. And I mean, you and I can talk about this forever, but I do want to end somewhat on a really, not like to say it was like a great note, but what I think about the difficulties that happen in our lives and that we see it, the injustices happens for those people in our communities, is movements start and people start to speak up. And the most recent, the Bajanista, she is Tiffany Alishe. I love her. She's awesome. And she is, everybody's probably seen her all over the news. She's been on every major news, Oprah, anything you could think of. And she talks about finances, personal finance. And she recently spoke publicly about when it was a disappointing is like such an easy way of saying it was disgusting. She got offered $2,500 to do this keynote for a major conference called FinCon, because we've all been past attendees. And then the president actually provides this, you know, information publicly, because he messed up technically, but she goes on to saying and showing proof that the white males were getting paid $50,000 for a keynote and the white women had been paid $10,000. And it ranged in that group. And herself to be offered $2,500. I mean, she even said she doesn't even tweet for $2,500. That's how big her audience is. And it goes to show that not only is racism real, but gender wage gap happens all the time. And you and I, as women of color as well, know this is to be true. And it's important to see more and more people speak up about their injustices. And I told Tiffany that it's more powerful when it's also other people sharing your story. And yesterday on Instagram, there was this huge movement called Share the Mic. And it was 50 of the most influential white women that you can think of, like Julia Roberts and just like these big names that shared their Instagram pages the whole day and different stories and on their feed. So Black women can tell their stories. And Tiffany was one of those. And for other people to see the struggles, especially what Black communities go through, and being able to share the mic. And that's why when you and I talked about doing this, I thought this is an opportunity to say, let's make everyone understand why Black Lives Matter and the importance of it. But when one person speaks out, then we have the courage to speak up and say, this happened to me, this happened to so many of us. And I'm going to be sharing too what's happening to me, not in this episode, but particularly the lack of representation. Tokenism is huge in corporate America, in conferences, in schools, pretty much anywhere through it. There's a book that's circling around. I have not read it, but I've seen some of the statistics and it's amazing, called White Fragility. Why it's so hard for white people to talk about racism. And I think it hits a point. One of the statistics that showed was all of the major companies, organizations that predominantly are usually white male or just predominantly white. And so that's the first problem right there. When people say they're diverse in their companies, I mean, the biggest corporations we could think of, they don't have diverse. Just because they have a handful of people of color does not make you diverse. It doesn't mean that you're including them. It means you have token. And I had to reflect, because I thought about that the last few years. I'm like, whoa, I've been a part of conferences where I was literally the only Latinx or I was the only person of color. And so check myself and say, you know what, I have to do better too. And say, calling these coordinators and organizers, I was saying, what are you doing to make it an even playing field? Are you having 50% be women speakers? Are you having more than 50% be people of color? And I think tokenism is such an issue. It has been an issue. And I think this is a movement that is either hopefully awakening people to see the injustices that most people don't understand what white privilege is, but to understand there's an ally that's happening with people that get it. And I, like I said, I gave shout out to all of the people that are white that are in my life. I have family members that are white. I have some of my best friends that are white. And the fact that they were like, they knew certain things, but now that stuff is coming into light, they're really speaking up. And there's actually one book I did want to recommend. I'm almost done reading it, and it's not for the faint heart, but it's called Wayward Lives, Beautiful Experiment. And it's by Saidiya Hartman. She's an excellent professor and scholar. Like she's part of the MacArthur Fellow, like all these amazing, but it's basically intimate histories of righteous Black girls, troublesome women, and queer radicals. And this book is real stories throughout so many years of her research and telling these women's stories that is so important because, you know, we talk about marginalized communities, but I think if we start to really look and reflect at what our country has done and what we can do to change it, we have to be more open to it. But yeah.
And I know you mentioned a lot of great unification that's going on with certain groups. I know you're working on something. Can you tell us about Project 2020 Call Out?
Yeah, so we're calling it Project 2020 Call Out, and it'll be calling out conferences, not to shame, or not just conferences, companies. And it wasn't an intent to shame people. It was basically to let them know, this is what you need to do to actually have inclusion. There's not only one thing about having diversity, but how do you include those people that are already in there? And then on top of that, actual equal pay. So what we see this happening too often is, oh yeah, we have a woman of color, right? And yet they're the ones getting paid the least. And obviously that's it's a total injustice as well. But I think it's far too long that many of us just kind of stayed quiet and we're either too afraid to speak up, or we know that the business can't go back to the way things are. And so being able to give them tangible action items that they need to do. And so part of it came about because of this whole FinCon thing that's been going on within the community. And I thought, you know what? They asked for help. And that's what it was. He gave out a statement. PT did a statement about how can we help? How can we get help to do more diversity within the conference? And basically asking us to do the work. And I'm like, you know what? I'm going to call you out on it. Fine. I will give you actual, not just myself, there's more of a group, more than a group of women of color, all different backgrounds, that are give them actual solutions. And let's see if they implement them, because that's the problem. Too many times we've called out people and companies, and you know, I think just recently they talked about Facebook being predominantly white. We know this, right? Predominantly, most of their employees are white. And the fact that they pledge themselves to say, oh yeah, we're diverse, and it's not, right? It's not good enough to have tokenism be what you base what diversity is. And so I think this will be not only another movement, but this can be a way that we come up with solutions and be part of that solution. And it's based off of a famous TED talk by Janet Stovall called she called it Project 87 when she was in college at Davidson University. She was one of 52 Black students out of like 1,500 students. And before she graduated, she called out the university basically saying, you need to get at least 100 more Black students. You need to hire at least 4 professors that are Black, and at least 1 dean, and also include at least 5 new courses that include African-American studies. And they went, she said it actually happened after she graduated, but they've gone above and beyond now. And she loves that because all it is, it takes a spark in giving people actual solutions. So if people are asking for it, we're going to come up with it and find a way that we can do it together, and not allow people to use the excuse that they didn't know or they didn't know how to. There's so many diversity inclusion specialists out there. And I find it funny that I keep seeing people talk about, hey, come and listen to us, our diversity inclusion talks, and yet there's no people of color on their panel. So this is a problem that's been too long. And so there's so many movements coming about it. But I know you and I and so many other women are going to be being basically that example that we wish we would have seen, not only growing up, but working in our fields. But because at the end of the day, representation matters. And so that's the best way to do it.
Mm-hmm. And right now there's so much change going on because of the power by numbers. I mean, within 2 weeks, we've seen so much change within corporations coming up and speaking up, talking about how they don't have the diversity, or they're committing to having more diversity, and just committed to honoring the Black Lives Matter movement. So it just goes to show that projects that you're rolling out, being unified in a protest, in a message, it goes to show that there is execution that is being made, you know, by our government, our city mayors, corporate America. So I'm excited to see the fruition of this project. When can we expect it to be
rolled out? Well, we're working on it hopefully within the next couple of weeks. So I think by the time this podcast out, it should be out. And obviously it's a work in progress, but I think it's a next step to making sure that, you know, these injustices are taken care of, that gender equality is not only preached, but it's practiced. So yes, we'll keep you tuned in as well. Thanks for doing this with me. I know it was hard for us to speak about this because it's still a touchy subject for us as well. But I think it was something important we needed to make sure we do.
Yes, definitely. I'm glad we had this conversation. Like you said, we felt called to do something, to say something, to stand in solidarity, you know, with the Black Lives Matter movement. And just, you know, continue to be allies, continue to show up with our Afro-Latina brothers and sisters, continue to do the education for ourselves, by ourselves, and ultimately also be a spokesperson for the movement, be an advocate, you know, within your circle, have those difficult conversations, you know, that are feel uneasy, but, you know, need to have so that we can continue the dismantling of white supremacy. And, you know, in the Latin community, we don't talk a lot about colorism and race. It's just something that is not talked about, but is known. And I'm glad that we're having all these conversations between Afro-Latinos about colorism and how we can change it. So I'm excited to see all the beautiful things that come out of this in the next couple of months.
Yes, me too. So everybody listening, stay tuned, and we'll definitely obviously go back to being financially savvy in 20 minutes, but we understood that at the end of the day, Black Lives Matter, period.